Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Walls in Our Minds. We are waiting for Terry Dodd and Red Beckman to come on the line. This is Dr. Kate. This is Thursday, March 24th. I'm going to play a couple of tunes until we have Red and Terry on the line. Thanks so much. Here we go. Terry.
Yes, ma'am.
There you are. I just put the sound off, and there you go. Here, unless you want me to go ahead and keep playing that and wait for Red.
I'm ready to go. Are we live?
Yes, we're live.
Have we welcomed those that are listening to Walls in Our Minds yet?
Yes, we have.
Oh, good. Sorry about that. I had to relocate where I had my computer set up real quick because we've got a bunch of company that showed up at my house, and there was a lot of noise in the background, so I needed to get to a place where I had some peace and quiet. Let's open up. I think Red might be about 5 minutes late getting in. You don't see him on the switchboard yet, do you?
Not yet.
Okay. Let's open up with a prayer. I could use a prayer about right now. Heavenly Father, I just want to thank you for another wonderful day and opportunity to grow and to learn more about your truth today. And we're just thankful that we can turn to you because in this time of stress and trouble in our country and in our economy, it's a tough time for a lot of people. And I just pray for everyone that's listening, and I just pray that your spirit be with us and watch over us and guard us. We trust and rely upon your promises. And if it wasn't for you, we certainly would not have much hope in this life. You know, so we're thankful that you've given us a way to be reconciled with you. Be with us this night and during the show, and I pray that your will be involved in what we talk about. It's in your son Yeshua's name we pray. Amen. Or hallelujah.
Hallelujah, and I believe Red is on.
I am.
Good evening, Red.
Mr. Beckman. Well, we're glad to hear your voice full and strong tonight, Red.
Just a moment. I got to get some more volume on this phone. I'm on a remote phone tonight. Yeah, now, keep going.
We're just glad to hear your full and strong voice tonight.
Well, I'm real pleased. I'm thanking my Creator because my voice is the strongest tonight that has been for weeks. And so it has to be, somewhat miraculous, probably. Anyway, I'm just glad to be here.
Well, tell us about what you're excited about this week, because I know that you're planning to do a DVD and have a video produced here, and Tell us a little bit about what you got on your mind and what you're planning on doing there that will educate the people.
Well, let me kind of start at the beginning. There's been quite a number of people that have spoke out and said we've got to set Red Beckman down and we've got to pick his brain and get a lot of information that he has worked so hard to get over the years. And they say, we've got to get it done. Well, and nobody was getting it done. And the last show I did with Alex Jones, which is several months ago now, he said, I've got to try to get one of my filming crews up there to interview on video, and it hasn't happened, of course. But anyway, there's a couple older patriots. One of them is an 88-year-old Lieutenant Colonel retired Air Force pilot. And he's functioning quite well for 88. These two fellows, they kind of got their heads together, and there's an organization up in the Seattle area. They worked with us too then, and they reserved today, Thursday afternoon, this afternoon, they reserved a studio to do this in a studio. But we were planning on a one-hour deal, and a one-hour deal just isn't quite what we need at this point. So the one old-timer, he's got a good camera. And he said, if we're not going to get it any other way, he said, I'm going to come down there to your place and we'll video this right there. Anyway, they got their heads together. They talked to me about it. And, man, we got to talking about it. And the more we talked, the better it sounded. And right now we're scheduled to be on Saturday, and it'll be right in my living room here, and I have a grandson that has a good camera as well, and he also has the lights that we needed. I was going to have to try to find some lights, but he has the light. He's a photographer and as well as other things, and so he said he would, provide the light so that we can have somewhat professional, but we won't have too many shadows, I hope. And what's going to happen is we're hoping that Terry will come down and come up to Washington State and kind of MC this thing a little bit. I just think that Terry is the ideal one to do what we're trying to, what I'm trying to line up for him. I wouldn't let him say very much because I got so much to say. We're going to do at least 2 hours, and so we've been working on an outline and of how it's going to be done. It's going to be done in segments because there's no way that I could go through even an hour without a break. And so we'll do it in segments. And Terry is the one, the two old-timers, as great as they are, as much as I love them and appreciate them, neither one of them would be in a position to do the introductions. We won't have more than about a half a dozen people here for this, which is more than enough. And as long as we've got people to run the cameras and that type of thing, why we'll do all right. And of course, I guess the adrenaline is running because I'm just I'm the most excited right now about this of anything that I've ever that I've done for a long time. And so it's up to Terry if he's going to come up and get in his 2 cents worth. So we'll hope that works out for him. If it doesn't, why we'll make out. We'll we'll get somebody. The good Lord will always, he's always provided the sacrifice, he did for Abraham and Isaac, and he can do it again. And of course, I think this is going to be an opportunity, and of course, my health is so up and down. I could have very easily checked out here, and gone to meet my Creator, which is not bad, which is not a very serious thing for me, but I would have much rather tried to put some of the thoughts and some of the thinking that I've done. I'd like to leave a record at least for my grandchildren, and we'll see what happens. Terry is going to, I think you said that you were going to check the air connections and all, and so we'll see. It's all yours right now, Terry.
Well, I wouldn't want you to tip off the FEMA agents that I'm flying.
Yeah?
Yes. I don't think they've got me on any list yet, but it could happen any time, you know.
I hadn't thought of that, but you got to remember that a year ago last November, I rode commercial airliners for the first time in over 10 years, and I went to Chicago to get in on a couple of days of your Continental Congress. And,
well, they obviously weren't. They obviously weren't listening to you, or else they wouldn't have let you fly back.
Yeah. I didn't have any problem whatever, other than I didn't like taking off my shoes and all of that. But I did, and because I wanted to get there and get in on that. And, of course, that's where I met you in live. We had done a number of shows together, of course, but I had never met you personally. And of course, that's where I met you. And I just think that being a Denver businessman and being someone that has really caught fire over the last couple of 3 years. This is what I'm looking for. This is what I am going to be talking to these people in this country, like the Tea Parties. I want to be talking to the angry American, angry about what has happened. He's been voting for a Democrat, or he's been voting for a Republican, and he's heard all of their campaign rhetoric, and the guy that gets elected, he's supposed to represent us, but it always ends up he is representing somebody else that isn't in working in the best our best interest for the people. And so we saw this uprising, you might say. We've seen Tunisia and Egypt and now Libya. And we don't want that here. We don't want to see that. If, as I have written in a couple of my books, if we have that here, if we have an uprising and blood is shed, it is the evidence of failure, because we were given a political system that should never have that kind of a problem. However, we the people, we believe too much political garbage, and we believe what we were taught in the government schools. And, of course, I just had to make this clear to a fellow about an hour ago. We're not going to go in there and say we're going to blame the judges and the congressmen and the senators and all that. That's not where the blame is. The blame is at your level and mine. We've got to make the corrections in our lives. And when we make the corrections in our lives, the rest of it will come easy. The public school teacher, they're just teaching what they were taught. My mother was a school teacher. Both of my sisters taught school. And I I've got nieces and nephews that are school teachers, and in fact, I've got a niece that's spent 30 years or better. I don't remember exactly how many, but she in one school. She was the math and computer science teacher, and she's semi-retired. She could retire full-time, but she said, I've just got to be busy with this, and so she's still teaching a few classes or so in that high school, and here she spent her entire career in that one school, and how many times does that happen? But it's kind of in our blood, our genealogy, I guess, to just be teachers, and that's basically what I'm going to try to do. And, of course, I'm going to try to warn everybody that they're not to believe me until they have, you know, checked out what I'm saying. And because this people believing stuff, that's why we got a world in such a mess. People have believed way too many lies, and that's our biggest problem in this country. We believe these lies, and so we're not going to. I'm going to be talking about public schools because I got a public school education, and when I tried to make the system work the way they taught, it took me about 20 years to come to the conclusion that. You know, the system as they taught it wasn't working, and something had to be done. And so that's where we're at right now.
Well, Kate, are you listening with us? Are you staying in here with us? Or you got a live mic, or are you on one of those 15-second delays?
15-second delay. Help me know.
I haven't seen Red Beckman on fire like this in a long time, and it does my heart good. And I just wanted to know if you felt the same way.
I certainly do. I've been listening on the edge of my chair because, Red, I can't tell you how much your words and your actions and everything you've done in your life mean to me. I listen very, very closely to what you're saying. And with that, Terry, we've got a 760 with their hand up, so I'm going to unmute them.
Yeah, well, I hope people get as excited as I am about this. And I think there will be a lot of people that are going to see this, and they're going to they're just going to say, when they see it all, they're going to say, wow. And here is the beauty of this. I want to tell you what I guess what excites me more than anything. This is not going to be put on commercial television. This is going to go out on DVDs, and it's going to cover the nation at our level, not at the level of the conspirators and the gangsters that have gotten control of our political system. It's not going to go at their level. It's going to go at the level of we the people. And that's where the problem lies in this country. That's where we have let this thing get this far down to the level we're at today. And so I'll be talking to we the people. They're the ones that I want to reach. And that's why this DVD thing, it has to be that the DVD is a gift directly from God. We did a lot of television starting back in the 1970s. But we had, the tapes, the VHS, and there was another one, I can't even think of the name of that, but the VHS kind of won the show, and we had a lot of VHS tapes made. However, they were expensive, and it took a lot of time on a machine to make the copies. We didn't have access to a high-speed duplicator, and so the cost was up there considerable. I talked to a gentleman today back in Montana, a man I've known for over 25 years. He has a duplicator that will duplicate seven in about 10 minutes. And he just can't hardly wait to get his hands on this because he's got several websites, and he has I don't know how many of the of our tapes from the past that he's got on his websites, but he is a true American patriot, and he got excited. The more I talked about it, the more excited he got, because. He's a very, very active individual. He's not a spring chicken anymore either, but he's still got a lot of life in him, the way it sounded today. Anyway, this is the DVD. Well, he told me. He said, when I buy the DVD, the blanks, he said, I buy them by the thousand. And he said they cost me 27 cents a piece after I figure in the freight and all the other expenses that might be connected with it. He said 27 cents for a DVD disc. The beauty of the DVD is just almost unlimited. And with the old VHS, if you had a second generation, we kept our first generations kind of hidden out, of course. But if you had a second generation and if you made a VHS off of it, you could notice the loss in quality right away on the second generation. When you went from second generation to third generation, the deterioration was even more noticeable. And so by the time people copy that program a number of times, the VHS just doesn't have much value. And let me tell you how effective this can be. In St. John's, British Columbia, that is up there on the Alaska Highway, north and west of Edmonton. It's north and west of mile one on the Alaska Highway, and it's a small place. And years ago, a party up there, they ordered one of my VHS tapes on one of our programs. They got back to me a year or so later, and they had 27 tapes out that they had helped produce, and they didn't know how many more were produced by people that had them. And, of course, they were smart enough. They kept back a couple as master tapes. But in a small community of, I don't think, more than 200 or 300 people, at that time, that was 80s, I guess. And but the word got out to people, and this DVD is just going to be it's going to be miraculous. I can't emphasize that enough. People can I'm finally trying to do things right, and so we're getting a web page, and on the bottom of the DVD there will be my mailing address, but there'll also be the web page, and people will be advised to watch that. And this video is going to go on that web page, and people are going to be able to watch it on their television or on their computer, or they can download it and have the DVDs. And it has so much flexibility to do it with his DVDs. It's just, to me, it's just a God-given miracle for this time and age in which we're living, because there's a lot of people out there that are literally starved for truth, and they're going to grasp truth, because I'll tell you a little more here. I'll let you guys. And Dr. Kate, it's sure good to hear your voice because I just like to hear you on the program. So anyway, whichever one of you is going to come and fill in the space here, the air, it's all yours. Are you there, Terry? Are you there, Dr. Kate? Did I lose everybody?
I'm sorry. I think I accidentally muted my microphone a while ago when I had some noise going on while I was listening. If you don't mind us shifting gears for just a second, we have a caller online, and I'm thinking it might be our buddy Neil. Neil, is that you?
Yes, I am on, and I am calling in to see how things are progressing tonight. What is the DVD that's going to be produced? What is the main topic of this?
It'll be just education for the American people.
Okay. Kind of like a class on the Constitution and restoring it, huh?
I'll be discussing that somewhat. However, I don't place as much emphasis on the Constitution itself. I place my emphasis on the preamble and the intent. If the American people can get a handle on the intent of the Constitution, then they are ready to apply the Constitution. They don't have to know the Constitution, what section or anything else. All they have to know is that the Constitution is a law that was written by we the people to control government, to deny government any kind of an opportunity to become a tyranny. And so if somebody's on a jury or a grand jury, and if it's fairly obvious that it's a controversy between a citizen and government, it's not hard for the person to recognize the fact that the government is trying to just railroad somebody off to jail for something where the government wants more power and they want to, terrorize people. You see, the IRS, they don't, they love tax protesters. They love tax protesters because when they have a bunch of tax protesters, that gives them the fodder for their court actions where they can send the man to jail, and then they make the headlines in the local paper where a local citizen has been sent off to jail by the federal judge because he was a tax protester. And that makes everybody in that area, it's terrorizing. It gives them the incentive to kneel down and kiss the hand of the tyrant and because they're afraid. Fear. And so if you're sitting on a jury and if it's a controversy between a citizen and government, it'll come out loud and clear in the course of the trial that the government is trying to send somebody off to jail and put them into their furniture manufacturing or whatever in the jail. They got ideas about how they can use people and pay them 15 cents or 30 cents an hour. The intent of the Constitution is what needs to be hammered into the American people. When you understand the intent, then you can go into the Constitution study and it'll mean so much more to you. But if you don't have a good handle on the intent, you're just not going to get it.
Okay. Let me pose a couple of comments here. I was on last week when Michael Douglas it was like a bingo for me when he mentioned the Expatriation Act of 1868 being the trigger, or the came just before the 14th Amendment. And the 14th Amendment, in fact, formed a new jurisdiction. But in order for that 14th Amendment not to be treasonous act, the day before they passed the Expatriation Act, which allows people, the people, not the persons, to state what jurisdiction they want to operate under. And that would be the constitutional one that you're talking about.
Yes. I'll tell you, I know about that. When I first started doing public speaking in the freedom movement, I talked a great deal about the Federal Reserve Bank and how damaging and how dangerous they were. However, you had trouble keeping the attention of an audience because they could take a couple of those phony green stamps and go down to the 7-Eleven and buy a six pack of beer. And so it's awful hard to tell the American people that that Federal Reserve note is a note. It's not money. It's a con job put over on a whole nation of people. And so as I went along, I came to the conclusion. When I talked about the Internal Revenue Service, I had an audience that would listen. And you have to use whatever it takes to get people to pay attention to what you're saying. If you go into a public meeting and you start talking about 1868, I'll guarantee you, you'll put them asleep. And because I've known about that that nonsense for a long, long time, and I had a friend in Montana that was a fantastic researcher, and when I first heard about the missing 13th Amendment, it just blew me away, and I thought, man, we can talk about this. Because the intent of the 13th Amendment was to make sure that lawyers couldn't operate, they could not become members of the U.S. Congress or the Senate. And I thought, boy, the people will buy this. No, it didn't work that way. And, of course, there's another factor here that I got to point out, too. 25 years ago, people were saying, they'd ask me, they'd say, how much longer is it going to take? When are we going to get enough people involved to where we can have an impact? And I said, well, I don't think that's going to happen until we have an economic meltdown in this country. When we have an economic meltdown, then you'll find people, their hearing becomes much more acute. And so when we're talking on this program, when I'm explaining all of this, I'm going to be talking about everyday stuff that people need to know. If you were to go to a Tea Party paper, function of some kind, you would have a problem if you started out on that because they don't know what you're talking about. And they have to be brought up to speed. And so there's a lot of people spinning their wheels talking about this, these exotic arguments. And they don't get very far with them, I don't think. Probably they do, but I don't think so from my own experience.
Yes. Well, where I'm at with this, I've become involved in the county level resetting or reestablishing a constitutional, lawful, de jure, jural assembly. And I think it must be at the state level, county and city level, which would then bubble on up to the national, rather than rely on the national. But recruiting people for it seems to be rather difficult. As you say, you can't explain expatriation acts and all the others. I'm looking at it to get some people together on the basis of it'll be a discussion of the Constitution. And everybody thinks, that's great. Everybody wants to go to meetings about the Constitution. And at that point, I can introduce them to this concept that you have an option to choose what jurisdiction you want to live in. At that point, you've got their attention. I mean, those people who are living off the proceeds of the IRS, they're not going to come because they don't care. They're living off our tax dollars anyway. But it's the people that are contributing to this. But that's what I had called Terry about earlier, because Terry had mentioned that doing it on the local level is going to be the key, that we need to get as many people involved as possible who want to establish their position.
Let me say this. I'm not going to be promoting on this DVD. I'm not going to be promoting that people get together for constitutional studies or anything like it. I want people to get a grasp on what I am saying, the very simple things that need to be understood. I think that all of that will follow, and it'll come voluntarily. It'll come, it'll just naturally develop as time goes on. Now, let me just say this. The first segment of this, I'm going to basically give just a little bio on myself. One of the things I'm going to bring out is the difference between a true patriot and a false patriot. And of course, Terry, he has read my book, Why the Militia. And I explain how that governments are always just temporary. Governments always have a tendency to self-destruct. But the nation or the government or the country remains. And this is something that a lot of people, I've had people say, well, if the United States goes, you know, we've lost the whole thing. The country's gone. That's not the case. Germany was devastated by two very bad governments in the first half of the 20th century, last century, less than 100 years ago. The nation suffered just a tremendous amount of damage. But if you were around back then, you remember how fast Germany came back. And Germany, the country was still there. The governments were gone, but the country, they continue. Governments, people have to get a comprehension of government and what it means. It doesn't mean that it's not the country. It's just something that people put together that's supposed to help maintain an orderly society. And but that's one of the things that'll be in that first section, and how that, you see, we've got so many people. They are what I call false patriots because they give their allegiance to the federal government. Their allegiance is to the federal government, not to the nation, not to our government or our country. Their allegiance, you see, if they're sitting on a jury in a tax case, they'll say guilty every time because they just think that anybody that would be a tax protester belongs in jail. Well, tax protest is so much a part of our history. It was tax protest that got the Revolutionary War started, and so tax protesters, tax protest, that's as much a part of of our society as you know, apple pie and Chevrolet.
You know, I've pretty much come to the conclusion that protesting what they do gives them legitimacy. And
right.
I do not, for example, send in protests against Obama and his actions and Obamacare anymore. I just tell all the people that are raising money to protest against him that you have no money from me until you protest directly in your capacity as an elected official to remove him for being a usurper. Now, along that same line, being a tax protester, it seems to me it's better to have a proper, lawful, constitutional, de jure government in place so that when it collapses, we have something for people to turn to. Instead of anarchy, because apparently our constitutional republic is the next closest thing to anarchy because the people run it. It's just anarchy run under rules. And so I'm inclined to think that we really need to establish as quickly but as simply as possible a cadre of people who are ready to listen to your entire history on DVD, but how to do it quickly now. And
let me make a recommendation. You be right up the front of the line when Terry starts getting some of these DVDs out, and I don't know how long it'll take to get it on the web page where people can get it worldwide. I don't know how long that'll take. I don't think it'll take very long. They say they can get it on Google and they can get it on YouTube, but YouTube comes in 10-minute segments, and so we're not all that, you know, concerned about YouTube. But Google, of course, when people are referred to it, they can go to Google and they're going to be able to get this. I think that once you see what we're saying, I think you'll agree. You see, the people we want to talk to, they don't know the difference between a de jure government than a tyranny. They don't know the difference. They're illiterate. Let me put it that way. They are illiterate as to legal terminology, constitutional law, that type of thing. And so I would say just kind of hang on to your hat a little bit, because this tape could make a difference in this country in a year. And we're not going to have people in the Tea Party, knowledgeable people. They're not going to be working to get congressmen and senators elected to the U.S. Congress and such. And they're not going to be putting their money in that game, because they're going to recognize that is just, I mean, they have us so brain damaged. Believing that Democrats and Republicans, if we've got a Democrat administration and if things are going downhill, then we all got to vote Republican the next time. And then the Republicans, they're going to do all these things. And the first thing you know, the country's on a downhill slope again. And so people have to go and they work their fanny off, they work their butts off. Raising money and going to rallies and all this kind of stuff and standing out on the street with a sign, that type of thing. I want people that will watch that tape, and the only thing they will try to do is see to it that all of their family, all of their neighbors, all of their friends have an opportunity to watch that tape, and if at all possible, we want one of these DVDs in every house in this country where the people have been totally hoodwinked by all of this stuff that has gone on. So it's not going to be, we're not going to promote party politics, I'll guarantee you that. And these people, sure, we'll recommend that they go to the polls so that they remain on the registration list, because most places they have to be a registered voter to be called for grand jury or jury. See, that's one of the main things. Another one of the main things that we're going to be talking about on this DVD is the fact that we have a three-vote political system, not a one-vote. People are trying to make a difference with one vote. And when they vote for that congressman or senator, he's on his own. He's got the position. He's got the congressman's position, the authority. And they go to Washington and make a whole bunch of law that is detrimental to the best interests of the people who voted for him. And so what we want to do, you see, is make it so that the people out there understand that, you know, sovereignty. I'm going to be talking about sovereignty. Sovereignty is impossible. In a one-vote political system, you just aren't going to have sovereignty at the level we want. The government will maintain their sovereign position if we don't use our grand jury and our trial jury's votes. And so that'll come across pretty loud and clear, I'm sure. The three votes of the people. And, you know, I wrote that up in a book, my first book that I published in 1980, the fall of 1980, when that book came out, and I talked about the three votes of the people, and I'll tell you, there weren't too many people that understood what they were reading at that time. I get feedback constantly from people that are reading the book and going back. That book is still in print after all these years, now, where we have this economic meltdown in the country, we've got people listening to what we're saying like we've never had in this country. And we're going to try to, you know, give them a different story. I'm going to tell people, don't you believe what I'm saying. You check me out. You just do your own thinking and figure out whether I'm correct or not. Because I'm not out there looking for believers. People used to say, Red, I'm behind you. And I say, I don't want people behind me. I want people up alongside of me that will become involved. And so we don't want people that are just joiners and such, but we want people that are educated enough. If they get called for grand jury duty or trial jury, either one, if they get called, they're going to know how to vote in that trial. And that's what we're looking for, because that, you know, that changes the system. Terry can tell you about my book, Why the Militia, and I've got a chapter in there about who controls the law. Sovereignty. Sovereignty means he who has the final say on the law. 3 or 4 years ago, if you talked sovereignty to state legislators and such, they didn't know what you were talking about, and they just practically threw you out of the House, the chambers.
They still don't.
Well, there's a big change, compared, like in my home state of Montana. I'll tell you, they're having a fantastic session of their legislature. They're not winning them all, but they're sure educating a lot of people. And Chuck Baldwin, a lot of people know who Chuck Baldwin is, and he says that Montana is the point of the spear. In other words, it's going to be the point of the weapon that we're going to use to restore lawful government in this country.
You know, we listen to him every Sunday because he streamed live about 1:30 here on the West Coast. And I was an elector for Chuck Baldwin and the Constitution Party in 2008 in California, which has gotten me involved in this because I had an opportunity to host him to come down and talk to some people in San Diego County. And we said, this is the kind of message that we need to get out. And so we got a lot of the Minutemen there and worked with him. But he's up there in Kalispell, Montana.
Kalispell, Montana. He moved his whole family up there. And he spoke at a gathering up there a couple of months ago, I think it was, that was pretty well advertised, and they had room for 300 or 350 people, but the people packed it out. There was standing room only. And that, I think, is probably the first time where he said that Montana is going to be the point of the spear. And Montana is definitely a different kind of a state for the simple reason that there's not as many people, and people have to be a little more independent in an area such as that, and that's what it takes. I appeared before the state legislature I don't know how many times in past years, and it was a waste of time. They would just about go to sleep while you're talking to them, and they tried to get a fully informed jury law this year, but they lost it because I think it was in the Senate Judiciary Committee thumbs down on it, and it never went to a vote. And I may be a little inaccurate on that, but basically they got shot down. However, it's going to cost some people their seats in the Senate. As they come up for re-election, they're going to find themselves sitting out in the dark wondering what happened to them, because the people back home are not going to forget this. And so 2 years from now, we'll probably get the fully informed jury bill through. And, of course, we don't need the bill. If we've got millions of our people informed by way of this video, and of course, you see, here's the way it works. This video is just breaking a trail. There will be a bunch of people around the country get the idea, and they'll sit down in front of a camera, and they'll make their video. Because I'm not going to be able to patch all the holes with 2 hours. But there's going to be a lot of people pick up on this because they recognize the effectiveness of it. So there's going to be a lot of things happen because of this video. At least I'm prognosticating. I guess I'm getting way ahead of myself. But I don't think it's just wishful thinking. I think that we're going to see some wonderful things happen.
Okay. You know, your comment about people don't understand the terms de jure and de facto, and because of that, whenever I want to use those words, I always make them a three-word phrase. I say constitutional / lawful / de jure, or I say unconstitutional / unlawful / de facto. And the de jure and de facto are the last part of the term.
Yeah.
So they get constitutional and unconstitutional. And a lot of people get the lawful and unlawful. And eventually they will understand the third word.
Gentlemen, I have my soapbox sitting over here next to me, and I'm ready to climb on it.
Yeah,
and I'm just warning you that as soon as you let me, I'm going to get on it here in a minute.
Oh, we're ready. I'm ready.
Let's go back to what Red was talking about the governments, and then I'll come back to your question, Neil, that you asked me a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that these governments have come and gone and that the people in the countries have been there is generally correct, and I didn't want to upset Red's flow, because he gets on a flow and man, he's great, and I don't like breaking that stride. But the fact of the matter is that I take exception with the example of Germany, and it probably my exception probably applies in other places than just here in the United States and at other times than just our generation. But the fact of the matter is that the government that was running, the shadow government that was running Germany, actually originated somewhere else be it Rome, be it, you know, here in the States. But at when Germany went down, and it went down, it the country went down literally, because they took the Orthodox Christian and the Protestant section of it and put it under the regime that the Vatican had installed in Russia when they took out the Tsar, who was protecting the Orthodox Church there. They put the Orthodox and Protestant section of Germany under that communist, atheist, Mason regime that had been installed in Russia. And the other section of Germany that was already under the Vatican remained under the Vatican, and they held it that way for two generations. But where did the regime, the backbone, the players that were controlling the money and the power, the ones that put Hitler into place, where did they go? They didn't go away. They came over here. And guess what? We're still under them. So that government has not really gone away. That government, that one world government group, that international bankster group, has continued to steal the assets of the common man all over the world. And they were doing it before World War II, and they're still doing it today. And now they have accumulated in excess of 90% of all of the wealth of the world. And the same spiritual battle has been going on. So
you're absolutely correct, but I'm not going to get into that, because basically what I want to get across to the people, when I bring that out, the difference between a true patriot and a false patriot, and you see, there was a majority of the people that voted for Hitler to become the chancellor, and of course you have to remember that Germany had been devastated by inflation. Bankers and such had promoted this inflation and such to where they owned, they had it figured out where they could own just about everything. And so the people were under a lot of stress because of this. And so when Adolf Hitler come along, and he was a very effective public speaker, apparently, and they bought the package because they were looking for, they were looking for change. And I am not using that word change carelessly, because we are in the same identical situation where people are, they want to see some change. And we got stuck with an alien as a president of the United States. And it's amazing as how long it's taken for the American people to wake up to that, what happened. But they will before it's over. And so things don't change real fast as far as the political is concerned. But, it can change. And, Prohibition really was hard on this country. Prohibition, it corrupted most of the sheriffs, the county sheriffs in the nation. And, it was very divisive. It was bad law. And it was not, it was the 18th Amendment. It was not until the 21st Amendment wiped out the 18th Amendment because the people had come to the point where they refused to convict anyone of making some beer in their bathtub or running a still out in the hills. The people were getting wise to it, and they just said, we're not going to convict anybody. And back in the hill country, from what they tell me of Kentucky and such, they don't try for prosecutions anymore because the people have discovered that they can protect each other so that they can grow their marijuana, patch of marijuana, and they might come out and pull them out of the ground and burn them, but they don't get prosecuted. Now, I saw that on one of the television specials at some point. If I remember right, and Terry would probably know whether it was Kentucky or Tennessee, one of those two, at one time they had 13 of their county sheriffs in the state prison system all at the same time because they got involved in the drug trades right while they were in the sheriff's office. Now, that's been within the last 15 years.
Red, I was just getting started.
Yeah, I lit a fire under Terry.
Can I make a comment here? This is Neil.
Yes.
You awakened another thought in me, Terry, when you said Germany was devastated. No, I guess it was Red. Germany was devastated, and they turned to the next best thing, which turned out to be not too good a thing, but they had to turn to something. All the more reason that we should have a constitutional, lawful, de jure government in place so that the people have something to turn to when this monstrosity that is operating out of our Washington, D.C. comes crumbling down. And it must.
Okay, no. Now, can I go on? Because you're right in line with where I was headed.
Okay, go ahead. I'll let you
Here's
speak.
The thing.
The
Here's the thing. It's the beauty of Red Beckman is that he speaks to Joe Sixpack. He doesn't speak to a Michael Donald or a Terry Dodd, even now where I am. He spoke to me a couple of years ago because I wasn't where I am now. He helps people come from that place to this place. And there's a purpose behind that, and it's effective. But there is a bigger picture. There is a bigger picture, and we need to be cognizant of this. And Neil, where you're going right now in the concept of assembly in your local area, I want to make this point. The precinct concept, have you ever heard of that?
Yes.
I think Jim Condit put that together and has pushed that. You heard of the Citizens Homeland Security Associations that Dr. Vieira has put out there that's kind of a precursor to a lawful, well-regulated state militia. You've heard of the Assembly.
Mm.
You've heard of all these different things and these different concepts, and the fact of the matter is that they're not different. They're all the same. It all boils back down to a grassroots organization taking control where you can control. I mean, Neil, you and I can't go out there and take over another state or Washington, D.C. We can't take over the International Monetary Fund. It's too big of a pond for us, and we don't have the wherewithal or the people or the infrastructure to even try to go out there and to do that. However, we can function in our own pond,
mm-hmm.
and we can reinstate or reform or invoke or revitalize our own community. And Red's message comes into play in the process of that, because what Red's message is needs to be understood by these people within the assembly, within the unit of the well-regulated state militia, or within the precinct.
Mm-hmm.
That message, that's a part of the educational process of that Red has honed down and understands and realizes the power of, and we have to use that as a tool.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is that we can only really have a bigger impact quickly in our own community and in our own state. And the way that you have to do that effectively is to organize at the grassroots level.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the assembly is all about. And it's scriptural, it's constitutional. But it's not one thing or another. You see what I mean? Like you look at the Alaska group up there. They've been labeled as a militant group, and to some extent they probably are.
Mm-hmm.
But when you organize at the grassroots level, you're not just organizing some militant group. You're organizing a fully informed jury. You're organizing preparedness. You're organizing a group of people who are going to be their own defense force. And that goes all the way to the older children within the family, that they all need to understand about being prepared, whether it's with food or whatever their needs are, to form a defense for that community or that state. Now, here's the thing, and why I brought out the thing about the international banksters and the Vatican and the Jesuits and the people who have been manipulating this whole thing for centuries. And it's the same people. It's a spiritual battle. These people are Luciferians for the most part. They don't care about the life of humans or their fellow humans or their neighbor. They really only care about their own self-power. So how do we take that on? Well, we take it on in cells. We take it on in a group of communities. We take it on one state at a time, and then hopefully a collection of states.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it through teaching them about how they have their power and how they can take that power. Red has a great message on just that. That is about retaking our power back. We've got the power. We've just got to learn how to use it. And Red can talk to Joe Sixpack and teach them about how to take their own personal power back. But let me tell you the problem that we've got. We have a major problem. And that problem is that we no longer control enough of our own infrastructure and assets. You know, you start talking about the courts, you start talking about media, you start talking about the schools, you start talking about the pulpits. We don't control any of those now.
Mm-hmm.
So who controls it? Well, the people that control it are controlling us because they control our money. We can't even buy our own army now. We can't buy our own defense force. Why? Because they have a vortex that they created that takes a piece of everything we produce. And when I say we, I'm talking about the common man, our neighbors, our community. They are sucking the life out of us because they've got that vortex that they've created. And until we get back to having proprietary ownership of our own medium of exchange that represents our production, so that they no longer have a vortex that's sucking everything out of us, we cannot enforce a presentment. We cannot really put together a viable and powerful enough organization at the grassroots level that is equipped and prepared to the level it needs to be, or educated at the level it needs to be, until we get back the proprietary ownership of our own medium of exchange, which is directly related to our production, our investment of capital and labor.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like Amschel Rothschild said, if I can control their money, I don't care who makes their laws. We've got to do that, and it can't be done separately. It's got to be done simultaneously. We've got to be organizing at the grassroots level. We've got to be teaching people how to take their power back, which is Red's message. But we've got to get organized and assemble. I don't care what you call it. You can call it a Homeland Security Association. You can call it a Community Defense Force. You can call it American, you know, Constitutional Forces. You can, you know, which is another general out there that's promoting that concept right now. It all comes back to the grassroots organization and education. But we've got to stop feeding the vortex. And if we don't stop feeding the vortex at the same time, all the other efforts that we do will be basically defeated in the long haul. We can have successes. Yeah, we can have a victory in a grand jury, or we can have victory in a petit jury. But they're still going to control the courts. They're still going to control the media. They're still going to, You know, you've got to see this. The only way to stop that power that they keep just building up, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger, and they keep owning more of us, they keep enslaving more of us, and not just more people, but a greater percentage of each person. We've got to get that vortex cut off. We've got to stop that flow of our production going into their pocket when all they're doing is enslaving us. We are not their slaves. Mm-hmm. Red can help somebody understand what it means to be a slave or what it means to be a sovereign. But we've got to stop the money flow, and we've got to take control of that in order to enforce any of the other parts of it. I'm off my soapbox.
And there's no simple solution to that, but organizing locally on the basis of you have the power, and you just can't cut it out. I mean, I hear the stop paying mortgages, stop doing this, that is economic terrorism, which might be interesting because it will bring to force into play the fact that this system is going to collapse. But it's having something in place that people can turn to, and somebody's already done the groundwork by writing that Constitution and the preamble to it, as you mentioned, Red, and putting those two together. I think just re-instructing people all across the country on the basis of the Declaration and the Constitution, and then put it to them. Now, what do you want to do about it? This is what you have. What can you do? And what can we do? Is that going to cut? What's going to cut it off? We can't cut off the flow because we go to jail. But if we can educate people and put them in a position to take over, when enough people cut off the flow, they have something to turn to. You keep bringing me back to that thought. And am I wrong here?
I'm sorry. Were you asking me a specific question?
Well, both of you. This keeps bringing me back the fact that we have got to, you say we've got to organize locally. I'm just looking for the best tool, and whether we should become upset over the fact that the organized unions say, okay, let's bring down Chase Bank. Well, I mean, I got my accounts at Chase Bank. Couldn't they have picked another one? But
that Chase owns your account. You don't.
Yeah, I know. But it's going to come one way or another, whether it's from external forces or internal forces. You know, they like to call it economic terrorism that they're planning, and this plotting by the unions to get people to stop paying their mortgages. Believe you me, when the defecation hits the rotary blade and bankruptcy is declared by this country, people are going to stop paying their mortgages. And it's going to be chaos. And since the Constitutional Republic is the next best thing to anarchy, I think it's the place we want them to turn to. And so every one of these movements should be setting up a proper constitutional organization and assembly. It keeps coming back to that.
Well,
every time you
I wish Michael Donald was here with us right now, Neil, because he would tell you that you don't have to restore the republic.
Mm-hmm.
He would tell you that the republic is still there. It was established. It has not gone away. The offices are vacant because they've been occupied or taken over by corporate structures and by people who are living outside of the law, outside of the Constitution. But by assembling, you can reinvoke the authority within your own community.
Reinvoke instead of reinstate or repopulate.
Right. That authority is there. It's established under law. The law is there. The law hasn't gone away.
Mm-hmm.
They've tried to make it go away. But it's like the statement about the Constitution. It is not going to defend itself.
Mm-hmm.
Neither are your unalienable rights.
Mm-hmm. And they're not unalienable. They are unalienable. Huh? Is that
well, you can both things are correct. I don't get into the semantics of all of that. The point is, they're not transferable. God gave them to us. They weren't given to us by the Constitution or by any man-written law. They were given to us by our Creator, and no one can take them away unless we cede them. If we let them enslave us, then we end up slaves. We've got to defend them, and the only way that we can defend them is by organizing. We can't do it just by ourselves. We've got to bring the education to the people's minds. They've got to understand that they have a right to judge the law, and they're not going to judge the law just isolated one on one. They're going to be more inclined to do that if they've got a dozen people standing there with them that all understand we have the right to judge the law. And it takes one person to educate another. You got to start with one, but it takes one of courage. There's a lot of people out there that don't have the courage to go it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So the more people that you pull together within your community that understand they have the right to judge the law, then you got a much better chance of getting one or two or three people on a jury that understands that their vote there is worth more than the one at the ballot box.
Yeah, you know, that boils down to my discussions with Walt Fitzpatrick, you know, and I said, well, you want to get back to the grand juries. I said, are you talking about forming citizens' grand juries? He said, no, I'm talking about the unconstitutional, unlawful, and de facto grand juries that are in place, but in fact they are in place, and it's getting to the jurors and letting them know they have the right to subpoena. And it's the subpoena power that is the big power here, that if we can put that into the hands of lawful people exercising their rights, which gets back right to Red's whole promotion of grand juries and jury nullification. I'm a practical kind of guy, and I'm trying to think of a way to get my next-door neighbors. You know, I live in a community of 100 seniors. And I have available next door to me here a clubhouse that'll seat 100 people. And I'm planning on organizing one of these groups on April 2nd for people to come in and just sit down and talk about this. And I want to give them something to point out their unalienable rights and how they can take it back. Now, Americans are used to signing some kind of a document or declaring something. And that's where I had trouble first with the signing documents for people joining these assemblies. And why do they do it? Why do you have to sign anything? Why don't you just stand out in the street and say, okay, I'm a sovereign and I have my rights? But people have been doing that all along. But if they fill out these documents that publicly state, like a contract that our Constitution was meant to be, that I am withdrawing from I am joining or rejoining, or what's the term you use? Re-invoking my constitutional rights. Now they got something that in their hand, something that they did, and then they can go forward feeling that they've got the strength of one and many. So, am I wrong?
Red, you be quiet. I didn't mean to knock you off of your role there, Red.
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't mind the break at all. And, of course, your conversation, both of you, opened up a lot of things that I'd like to talk about, but I'm not going to be able to remember all of them. But I want to emphasize something, a couple of things about these groups that people want to join, the assemblies and all these different constitutional organizations. And I'm glad they're there. I think they're very ineffective. when an organization gets so big, it becomes almost a microcosm of a political party such as Democrats or Republicans. And what you will find is that the people sitting out there as members are not participating. They come and they listen and they go away and they don't do anything because they're so dependent on their leadership in their organization. And they're the ones that the memberships and such, they can go playing golf on Saturday and Sunday and such, but they'll go to the meeting and they got a membership and they'll pay some dues perhaps. But you know, there's a lot of organizations out there, and this is always something that I have said, hey, I love it. And the reason I do is because the more of these organizations we've got, the more hair pulling you're going to have in the FBI and the CIA and all the rest of them. They've got so many of these organizations out there, they can't keep up with them. And so that's better than having one big organization where everybody follows the leader, because you're going to end up with a political party again, and we don't want political parties. You see, you've got a certain number of your people that are kind of they're a herd animal. They like to be in a herd. But you'll find there's an awful lot of people out there that want to live their lives unhindered, unhampered by anything that the government might design or anything else. They don't care for organizations. And those people are the ones we really want to get to, because if you're a member of one of these organizations, if you're a member, let me tell you something. The U.S. Justice Department has got you pegged, and you're never going to serve on a jury or a grand jury. It isn't going to happen. Back in Billings, Montana, we run our first television special in June of 1976, and we started having meetings every week in the Holiday Inn Convention Center there in Billings, and sometimes we would run 300 or 400 people. And we would have these sessions, and the IRS, they were out in the parking lot taking all the license numbers of all the people that had come to that meeting. And the word got around in a hurry, don't go to Red Beckerman's meetings because you're going to get a notice from the IRS that they want to audit your tax return. Now, that's the kind of people that we're dealing with. They'll do anything for a paycheck. And IRS agents are, I mean, they'll commit all kinds of crime. They know, for the most part, most of them know that it's a scam that they're a part of. They know that, they're just being used, but they're being paid a high salary to let themselves be used. And so this is some of the things that we have to keep in mind, because if you get a group, and it doesn't have to be very big. Some years ago, it's 15, 20 years ago. I'll never forget it in my life, because I had this guy come out to my house. And He was a rancher in what they called Garfield County, Montana. There's less than 1,500 people, I think, in the county. I don't think they've come up with their population. If anything, they've gone down. This fellow, he was up in years, and he had a grandson that had a health problem. And he would take his wife and the daughter-in-law and the small boy, he'd take them to Billings, and as I remember, it's 150 miles or better, and he was going to Billings, and this highway patrol stopped him, and hardly any traffic on that highway, And this cop, he was just went berserk. And he threw this old rancher down on the ground and just, I mean, he was abusing him. And here there's two adults sitting in the car watching all of this. And they're hearing the talk and everything. And so this fellow had come to Billings. And he had tried to get the county officials up there in Garfield County to do something, and they wouldn't do anything. And he had gone to different law enforcement agencies, and they wouldn't do nothing. And so somebody said, "You better go talk to Red Beckman." Well, I couldn't believe the story. I didn't know the fellow, of course. And basically, all I could do was hear him out. And so he told about how that he had just been to the FBI office. Well, he went to the U.S. Attorney's office. And the U.S. Attorney told him, "Well, we can't do anything unless you have an investigation and a report from the FBI. So he was in the federal building, so he just found where the FBI office was, and he went to the FBI. And he walked in there, and he said there was a fellow sitting behind this desk. And so he asked this rancher, he said, "Well, what can I do for you?" And this fellow said, "Well, I got a story to tell you." And he says, "We've got a problem. We've got a law enforcement officer out there that should be fired and the whole bit." Anyway, the FBI man heard him, heard his story out, and he said to him, "Why didn't you go to the FBI in Garfield County?" And this rancher told me, he says, I laughed at him. I told him, "We don't have FBI in Garfield County. We just, I mean, it's big ranches, many, many sections to a ranch, and there's a lot of sheep and cows and horses and all, but we don't have an FBI agent up here." The guy said, "You sure do. You do have an FBI agent up there. In fact, there's two of them." And this rancher, he caught on right quick, and he said, "Who are they?" Now, this rancher was in his 70s. At that time, he was living, when I knew him, he was living in the house that he was born in. He had never gotten away from it. He knew everybody in that county just about, I think. And so the FBI man, he wasn't too sharp. He said, "Oh, it's so-and-so and so-and-so, two ranchers. These are neighbors of this rancher. And these ranchers are being paid a sum of money every month so that they report on any activity that might be anti-government." Now, does that kind of get your attention?
When we had all those meetings.
Montana
was shoveled snow.
What?
I thought the only thing they did in Montana was teach you how to shovel snow. That's why I'm staying away. But good
Lord. Well, I've got a friend who lives in Southern California, and he's got a place in Montana as well. And he gets more snow down there. In fact, they've had over 60 inches of snow down there where he's at. In California, and his place up in Montana that he's got there, he spends 6 months out of the year in Montana, and he's never seen that much snow.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt you, but your story...
California has the highest snowfall rate of any state in the Union, and of course there may be some changes on that because of all the snow they've had on the East Coast. In fact, they're in the middle of a snowstorm right now, I think. But anyway... Montana, you know, I wish I were there, but I'm not. I was quite ill back there, and I didn't have any other family other than my missus, and I didn't want to leave her on her own by herself. And so we came out here where we had some family so that if something happens to me, why, she'll have somebody close.
Oh, that's good. You came out of the hospital okay, huh? Doing fine now?
Well, I'm not okay, but I'm going to be revved up enough in the next couple of days to keep enough adrenaline flowing, because I'm just more anxious all the time as we go along to, you know, to get information out there. I've studied this stuff, you know, so carefully for years, and I found, well, we had an organization back in 1980 in Southern California with over 25,000 members. Over 25,000 members. They fought the money issue, and they were pretty effective. But when the feds moved in, they took the director, and, of course, they sent him up for 8 years. They stole a tremendous amount of money, because the people that belonged to that organization were all dues payers. They paid dues to the organization. He had a big safe in his house, and he had a lot of gold and such in that safe, and the feds got it all. Now, there's a fellow in federal prison right now, and they've got him on. They've already got him convicted on at least in two trials. I think they got another one coming. I talked to his missus here recently, and she said he'll never come out of there alive. He had the same thing down in Florida. He didn't have that many members, but he had members. And when the Fed started coming down on that organization, he skipped the country, took his money, and went to Panama. Our government just went down there and kidnapped him and brought him back. And he's been in jail now for going on 3 years. And, of course, they keep coming up with more charges and more charges. Well, you heard of the actor that just went to federal prison in Florida. I don't follow that stuff, so I can't give you his name. But he was one of the members of that organization. And so what has happened is these people were left high and dry, because the head that was doing the thinking for them was locked up. And then the feds, they had all of the records of all the membership and everything, and I'll tell you, they're just terrorizing these people that had joined that organization, paid dues to it and all, but they thought the organization was going to save them. And I don't know how many have gone to jail already, but I can assure you there's going to be a whole bunch of them that are going to get the, you know, they're going to go to jail. They call me and say, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? And, of course, I feel pretty helpless, except that, you know, I can tell them to challenge the jurisdiction or the judge for his conflict of interest. And we're having very good success in the tax court with the, you know, it's not a court at all. It's just a system, a political system built to plunder the people. But when we cite that tax court judge for the fact that he is a government employee, if he is a government employee, he is a government agent. And his judicial code of ethics address conflicts of interest. He cannot make findings of fact or conclusions of law if he has a conflict of interest. And that just takes the tax court plumb out of the picture, because in tax court, you can't have a jury, you can't have constitutional due process, and the tax court judge makes all findings of fact and conclusions of law. Now, I'll try to use this to come back to something here that there's a real potential for this happening if we can get enough people to recognize their power on a grand jury. Suppose you've been plundered by a tax court judge, and we get this thing turned around, we get people on grand juries. And so this victim of this, he goes to the federal grand jury in his area, and he tells them his story. And the subpoena power of the grand jury is so powerful. You remember Bill Clinton didn't want to go to the grand jury, but he had to. they kind of give him, let him get away with something that they shouldn't have let him get away. But that's where he said, who has the definition of is or something to that effect. The grand jury can subpoena the tax court judge that made the findings in fact and conclusions of law of, in this case that this victim had. They can subpoena him, and they can ask him just a couple of questions. If they ask him the question, say, well, are you a government employee? Well, yes. Are you a beneficiary of the tax laws? Yes. Did you make findings of fact and conclusion of law in this certain gentleman in his case, and did you make him pay up this amount of money? Yes, I did.
Case dismissed.
No. We don't want the case dismissed. We want that guy convicted. We want him charged with a crime. He is a criminal. Where's his oath of office? Where is his sense of honesty and integrity? He hasn't got any. He's there because he's making this $100,000 or $150,000 a year, I suppose, as a tax court judge. He's not going to give that up. But when that grand jury gets a hold of him, they'll clean his house.
If now, they can.
And what will happen is you'll have tax court judges and former tax court judges all over this country that will have to head for the border because there is no statute of limitations on fraud. None. So,
there's none on treason either, is there?
What?
There's none on treason either.
No,
is there?
Uh-uh. No, but you see, a grand jury can't cite somebody for treason. That's the Congress that has that responsibility. And so when the grand jury start to function, and of course here again, you see, the people that belong to all these different organizations and the feds have been able to identify them, they're not going to get called for jury duty or grand jury duty, either one. I don't know. This is a humorous thing that happened, and this happened just in the last 3 or 4 months. I don't remember exactly when, but it wasn't very long ago. I kind of lost some track of some time here, so I'm probably off more like 4 or 5 months. I don't know, but anyway, they were the state of Montana was prosecuting a guy because he had some marijuana in his house. Well, I think he was on probation. He was not an honest, law-abiding citizen. He had been in trouble before, and so the state, the drug enforcement and such, they thought that he was selling drugs, and so they raided his house, and they found a little packet with 1/16th of an ounce of marijuana. That's all. And so they charged him with, I'm sure, 2 or 3 different counts or something. They like to have more than one. Anyway, it went to trial, or it was supposed to go to trial, in the state court in Missoula, Montana. And they were in the voir dire, and they were the attorneys were asking people on the jury panel, about 40 of them. They were asking them questions, and this one lady on the jury, she spoke up. She spoke up like she should, and she said, "I don't know what you people are doing, but," she said, if I'm picked for your jury, I'm not going to say guilty. I don't care what kind of evidence you've got. I'm not going to say guilty. You people keep trying these Mickey Mouse cases," and I don't know if that's the word she used, Mickey Mouse, or not, but she said, "You keep using these, and then you wonder why we, and then you come to us for a lot more money. You got to have more money to run the courts, more money to run the prisons, more money to run the welfare department to take care of the guy's family while he's in jail." She said, "I'm not going to go along with you. And I think if I remember right, she said there was 23 others on the panel that stood up and said they were of the same mind and they would not say guilty in any case. It stopped the trial right there. Now, that story made it into the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times. It made it into the Wall Street Journal. And so this is the kind of thing that is going to happen more often. It's going to happen. Years ago, I think it was down in Oklahoma, there was a trial going on, and it was, I mean, they were just trying to get this guy hauled off to jail, and the guy had a what they call a pretender, a lawyer pretender, or whatever it is. Anyway, he was a government-hired defense attorney. And he wasn't asking the right questions and anything. And there was a man on the jury that finally spoke up right from the jury box. He said, I want to ask that witness some questions. And, oh, my goodness, I mean, this just absolutely, the court just went bonkers. And the judge shook his finger, I guess, at the guy and said, you're not supposed to be asking questions like that. You can't ask questions. That's not your job and this and that. And he said, if you do one more thing like this, I'll have you booted. And that guy on the jury says, you have me booted, and you'll be hoping that you, or be, you'll be wishing that you hadn't. And the judge tamed down, and the trial proceeded, and the guy was able to ask the witness the questions. Now, it takes some manhood, it takes some womanhood, it takes some guts, but this is what we've got to do. We've got to come to this point where we'll stand up to them and say, no, we're going to ask some questions. If we got questions that need to be asked, we're going to ask them. And so, you know, we've made a little headway in the 35 years since I started this, getting involved in this. And it's just about to a point now where it can accelerate and it can grow by leaps and bounds. And I think that this video DVD that we're working on will help to do that. At least I hope so. And so there were some other things you guys brought up that I wanted to address, but my 82-year-old head, the forgetter, works better than my rememberer. Red. And so I'll have to turn it back.
He's got a question, Red.
Does the DVD cover what that guy in the jury can say when he holds the judge? He said, you're going to be sorry. Tell him what he's going to do to make the judge sorry if he removes him.
He needs to go to a grand jury. He needs to go to a grand jury and say, this guy, this judge, is trying to manipulate the evidence in this trial. Back in the early 70s, there was a case down in California. It was a tax case. And the guy was trying to use a constitutional defense. And the prosecutor took a copy of the U.S. Constitution, threw it on the floor in the courtroom in front of the jury, and stomped on it. And he said, that's what I think of your Constitution. And that jury went out and convicted the guy. Now, you tell me, did we have some heads that had been damaged, some brains that had been damaged? Absolutely. And that's what we're trying to avoid. We want to change that.
Right.
Back to you, Terry. Terry's got a bad cold, and he has got just a day or so to get ready to come up here to kind of introduce me for this video, and we'll probably have him say a few other words. But I just think that, I've had a tendency to kind of treat him like a protege, and I would like to have him be a part of this whole thing. And so We'll take him cold or whatever. We'll take him if we can get him. So that's the way it is.
I was thinking about coming, but you told me I only get 3 cents worth. I think I deserve at least a nickel.
What was this about?
You told me that I was only going to get 3 cents worth. I thought I deserved at least a nickel.
Well, you know, we can start at 3 cents, and the bidding can go up from there.
I'll give him a nickel.
Neil, I want to make sure we've addressed your question, and I apologize for not having time to get back to you earlier today, by the way, Neil. What other questions do you have? Because you're trying to do something out there that is, I know that it's going to be beneficial to your community, and I know that you have the courage and the knowledge of pulling this together in a way that it will be effective, and it won't just be some rogue group out there. I believe you'll pull in people who are respected in your community and work and network with other groups. And I just want to make sure we're answering your questions.
Yeah, well, my question was on doing this on a local level. What I'm faced with is on the 15th of April, there's a big Tea Party gathering, and it's a tax protesting. It's Stop Taxing Us, STU, that's sponsoring it. And they have booths at these where people organize and bring people into whatever it is their particular movement is. And I was wondering about taking a booth to open up the information to people about joining such a group that is going to take back or re-invoke the Constitution. But the more I think about it, you don't want to do it at a booth. It is almost like home groups. What we need is home Bible studies, but there'll be home Constitution studies, because there are all of these, as Red just pointed out, IRS and FBI and agents around us that are on the payroll. So to go to a big public meeting that really is not interested in what we're doing, they're interested in protesting against the de facto, it's the wrong venue to try to recruit people. And so I have concluded that I will continue with doing something locally, getting people in and telling them that I'm going to talk about the Constitution. And I'm going to have them go to these other meetings, and at that point they can quietly talk to people and say, you know, there is a way you can take back your Constitution. You can reinvoke it, and it's going to be done through the power of the grand juries. I just don't like working with the de facto grand juries, but if that's what we got to do, we got to do it. So it pretty well answers my question tonight, and I thank you so much.
Well, one of the things that's going to happen, I believe, with these DVDs,
mm-hmm.
I think that you are going to find, and I used to say that, but I remember back in the 70s and 80s, I would tell people, I'd say, do you really want to know how bad it is, how poorly run our government is? If you really want to know, talk to the people in government. The peons that are working in there doing the drudgery work and all. And one of the reasons why I come to that conclusion, I was at our school anniversary, our class, there was a small town, and they had what they call an all-class reunion about once every 10 years. And this is the mid-80s, so I was close to there, and I went to that, and I always try to make it if I can. And there was a young fellow came up to me, of course, he had watched our television, and he'd read some of my material and such, and he told me, give me his name. He graduated about 20 years after I did. And he said, I work in such and such a department in Helena, Montana. He says, I've got another, I think he said 5 to 10 years or somewhere in there to where I can retire. And he says, I can't hardly wait for that time to come. Because, and then he just started giving me a briefing on what's going on in state government. And so I've had these people come to me on a regular basis from different levels. When I walk into the county courthouse back in Montana, I've got all kinds of people. They're glad to see me, and, you know, it's hi, Red, and good to see you, and all of that. I was a businessman in that town, and I banked in that town. I was well known in that town. And those people know that I have some integrity because I had a reputation for being having integrity. And so when somebody's going to get one of these DVDs and they're going to have a neighbor that's a low-level office worker or something in a county office or a state office, and you're going to go over there and say, hey, come over here and watch this tape or watch this program. You got to watch it. You've got to. And that's what's going to happen. So I look for, as this thing, there's an acceleration. As there is an acceleration in this protest, this national disgust and distrust and all of government, I look for an acceleration of this happening, and the disgust is going to be very visible to everybody. And so, I know about the money issues. I can tell you a lot about that money issue thing. And it's something that has to be addressed. I'd like to leave this audience tonight. We're getting close to time up. I'd like to leave an idea, and I brought this out on the Alex Jones show, and it really kind of set him back on his heels. This has to do with the money and the debt, the American debt. It has now been reported in the U.S. newspapers that the Federal Reserve Bank holds over half of the debt of our federal government. Now, that is not a national debt. That is a federal debt. And always make sure you make the right designation there, that it's the federal debt, it's not the national debt. If it's the national debt, then we're all obligated to pay it. If it's a federal debt, we can bankrupt the federal debt and the creditors all go on crying their beer. You see, if we keep working on this, we can see the day when Congress, we get enough of those people educated, because now don't forget, they went to the same kind of education system we went to. They go to the same kind of churches. They read the same newspapers, and so they're just doing what they were taught. You got to remember that, and I'm going to stress that on this DVD. If the Congress will do what they should do, and all, they are the ones who created the Federal Reserve in the beginning. They were the creators, and they should have had absolute 100% control of it if they were going to do that. But they didn't. They just they turned it all over to a bunch of international outlaws. Now, if the corporation, if this Congress takes the corporation for the Federal Reserve and dissolve that corporation, you see that federal debt that is sitting there on the shelf in the Federal Reserve Bank, we're having to pay the interest on all of that money. those international outlaws are collecting interest on all that money that was made out of sand and thin air to start with, and it all belongs to us, we the people. And so that debt is an asset to the Federal Reserve Bank. That debt is a liability to the federal government. If the Congress would dissolve the Federal Reserve Corporation, they would remove that federal debt that's sitting on the shelf in the Federal Reserve Bank, and they would put it back into the U.S. Treasury. Now, what does that do to the federal debt? If the Fed holds half of the debt, half of the debt is solved right there.
Yep.
Just that quick. So I, as we get ready to call it a day or a program, I want people to just think about that a little bit. This is one of the big ifs out there, of course, but this is something that could happen. And, of course, if we had the grand juries functioning properly, there would be a bunch of those international law outlaws. There may not be a nation on the face of the earth that would give those people any refuge. They would probably, we'd probably be able to extradite them from any government, any nation on the face of the earth. Because of their crimes against people and humanity, and their crimes against the international community as well. So with that, I'll wind my side of this thing down, and I'm surprised at how well I was able to keep my voice working for me. I did stumble over some of my words and all, and I have to apologize for that. But that kind of goes with the territory. So. I'll be hearing from you, Terry, so I'm going to say goodnight to your audience.
Well, thank you, Red, and it's been a great pleasure for all of us to see you coming back strong and full of memory and vigor, and it's just it's a pleasure to see and hear, and my heart is much warmed, and Neil, I really appreciate you calling in and joining us tonight. I know that was short notice and not expected, and it's you've really been helpful, and I really appreciate your questions, and you're a very knowledgeable guy, and you're always welcome on Walls in Our Minds.
Well, thank you, and I'm impressed with Red's comeback, and I'm invigorated and excited.
Let me say one more thing. You see, the biggest problem I have at the present is the rheumatoid arthritis. That's what gave me the major problem with all my heart problems and such, and I'm still having to live with that. But I'm anticipating some changes. We've been working on this for 10 years, and I think we can eventually we can conquer this with our Creator's help. And it's been a constant companion now for over 10 years, and you know I you don't get used to it. But anyway, that's the story on my health.
Neil, could I really call on you tonight and ask you to close us in prayer? We got about a minute and a half left.
Well, it's not my forte, but.
That's okay.
Let's see if I can add some words. I'm going to call on our Father in heaven to help us on this journey, to keep us doing your work, and make sure that we don't forget that we are the salt of the earth. We are not to sit back and say that your message from Revelations is going to happen, and therefore we'll sit back and wait for it to happen. We have to keep doing our job that you've assigned to us, and that is fighting for your people, your word, and I pray that those who serve our country will
their senses and help to save us, save this nation. And I ask that in the name of Jesus. Thank you.
Amen and hallelujah. Good night, everyone. Thank you
for
joining us on Walls in Our Minds.
Good night.